irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
You know, you can take the man out of KNX, but you can never take KNX out of the man.
Hey, I've been to the White Cliffs of Dover.
Have you?
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
I've seen pictures.
I've been there. It was probably about 12 years ago. And just I had to go and tour through the caves, you know, and that are there from World War II. And it's just really kind of cool,
yeah.
You know, especially for someone who, you know, we grew up with that as our back, as our history.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, our close history.
Right. So. Yeah, right. And I can remember the RAF pilots talking about as soon as they saw the White Cliffs, they were home.
Yep. Made it all the way back.
Made it home.
And it's such a short place to go from country,
22
you know.
Miles.
Yeah, it's like really small, you know?
And in a Spitfire, that's, what, 7 minutes?
I still can't figure out how they got 1,000 ships across there without being seen.
I know,
Good for the fog.
Or when they went to go pick up the guys at Dunkirk.
Yeah, Dunkirk too. Yeah.
Oh, that was Dunkirk.
Yeah, that was came out of London and all the little towns
everywhere. Yeah,
30 feet or above. That's the size of the ships, the boats they wanted, which was amazing.
You know, and
300,000 guys they took off that beach in 2 days.
Yeah. It's just amazing, you know, and it was all under a whole lot of pressure, you know. And
the Germans go to hit the beach, and they look around. There's nothing there but discarded gear. Everybody's gone. How do they do that? Who knows? Yeah, who knows? Anyway, this is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host of the show in studio with Bob Brill, other host of the show. And, of course, we have with us, and just gracing our presence this evening, would be
Gracie,
the
sir?
Bookie herself, Jerry Christina.
Gracie. Gracie yeah. George. Yeah.
Gracie. And we have a great writer on tonight. I was actually enthralled. I only got through one of his books, but holy crap, was it good.
Yeah, good stuff.
Really well done. And the question that you're going to ask him, what I think is really appropriate, because it's very hard doing what he did.
Yeah, no, and there's a lot of dialogue.
Yes,
you know, this
is
a book filled with dialogue, and I want to talk to him about too something we brought up a couple of weeks ago with the one author we had on who had a character who spoke with an Irish brogue.
Right.
Here we didn't have that.
No, we didn't. Know, but no. You picked up the Russian.
Yeah, you felt
the
it.
English.
You know, you felt it.
Yeah.
By identifying with the characters, and I liked it a whole lot better that way.
Yeah,
you know, and because you had people with different languages, and but you just felt the way it was written. You were there with them.
Right.
You were there with them, and that was good. You know, that kept me there because, you know, it's like when you're writing. You got to make a choice if you're writing people different languages or different accents. Got to make a choice what you're going to do there. And I always like to lay it out there and let the reader figure it out. Let them identify with what you know it is. You know, and like I talk about Lancer, I never describe Lancer, his face anyway, because I want the reader to imagine who they're imagining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I got to do that here. That's what I think I liked about this book.
I did the same thing with The Hunter, and everybody. Everybody, I think everybody came back with the same person, Sam Elliott.
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Sam Elliott is quintessential today cowboy.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Or Tom Selleck.
Or Selleck, yeah, either one of them.
Smokey the Bear. Come on,
I like him. Okay,
yeah, I mean Sam Elliott, Smokey the Bear. Only you can. Revenge.
Actually, there's a guy, Lee Marshall, who used to be on KHJ. He's one of the boss jocks on KHJ Radio.
I knew Lee Marshall.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was up at Ventura for a while.
Yeah, that's right.
In the morning show with Cindy Ovalle.
Yeah, there was I ran into him with an old story that I can't tell on the radio. But that's
Lee's a good guy. Lee's a really good guy. Anyway, he's Tony the Tiger.
You know, I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah, he was, and you know.
Is that the guy I rode in the carriage with in Moor Park?
No, that was John.
John.
John, that was John Cowsill.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right.
The John Cowsill.
Yeah.
The John
Cowsill.
Yeah, he had a country show on KHAY Radio in Ventura.
In Ventura.
Same building that Lee was in. Yeah. Only that was the FM station. He was on the AM station. Yeah. M13 KVTA, I think it was.
Not sure.
Anyway, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing, and this is how this thing works. If you finished your book, you've typed your last period, you're ready to do something with it, and you're not really sure what. Well, most writers run into this. They don't know where to go with their first manuscript. That's what we're around for. Black Dog is good at taking manuscripts. We can go through them, give you an idea of what it's going to take to get that thing done and get it published and on the shelf for you. We have copyright editors and editors available, and if you want to use your own, that's fine too. The bottom line is to get your book out, start making you money as a writer, and that's what everybody wants. Of course, that everybody, you know, gets their books done and they give them away to their friends and relatives. But the last time I said that, old Bob was over there just nodding his head. Yeah, that's what happens too.
No, I make mine pay for it.
You get one good check from Amazon, and your ass is grass. Okay, so
I got another one this week. I got another deposit.
Me too.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah.
I want to raise.
No.
Well, there's a little handle on the right-hand side of your chair there. You just pump it like, you know.
You can get a hold of us at 805-795-3165 is the phone number. Or you can email jcristina at Tuscany Bay Books or R. Polinelli, P-A-L-O-N-E-L-L-I, at Tuscany Bay Books. .com, and we'll get back to you and give you instructions what you need to do from there. And good luck in your writing. And of course, the bottom line on any author is don't stop writing. If you're writing now, don't stop. So keep that in mind. Keep Black Dog in mind and keep writing. Okay, let me move over to Out West. Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rockmount Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com, or you can go to www.scvoutwest.com. Both of those will get you into their online catalog. Enter the code WB for Writer's Block, WB100, and receive $10 off your order. Or you can call them toll-free at 877-340-9378. And we happen to know these folks, so they're pretty good folks to do business with. And last but not least, since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload, and LTL service that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they work hard to make your full truckload shipping or LTL experience unparalleled. Using their customized traffic movement program. So call TFM Truckload or Target Freight Management LTL. Call today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski. For Truckload or any of the fine account managers at 888-653-1323 for LTL. Tell them you heard it right here on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. Or if you prefer, www.targetfmi.com on the web. Okay, let's get into our writer for tonight, because this guy is, like, phenomenal. He writes in historical fiction, and, of course, his short bio is, his name is Roy M. Griffiths. We call him Griff, he calls himself Griff, and the person he hates the most calls him Roy. He is born in Texas City, Texas, and he was the son of a career Air Force meteorologist. Attended a variety of schools, and he just went through a whole bunch of jobs. And he liked getting into fiction, and he is right now he has moved back to Texas, and I don't really know what he's doing, but we'll find out tonight. And he has written a series of books called Wait a minute. I'll get it. The hands. No. What is it?
Bring them on.
All right, Roy. What is it? It's what?
Roy, how do you prefer
on,
your series of looks?
The one we're discussing right here is called By the Hands of Men.
By the Hands of Men. There you go. B-T-H-O-M. That's how I have it in my computer.
And that's how I have it in my computer as well.
Okay, well then we're talking about the same book. I will apologize to you, Griff, that I did not get a chance to read book two or three. But I did rip through book one, and my God, what a wonderful story.
And gosh, thanks. It's really, I'm just really thrilled. You guys are like killing me with kindness here. I thought I should hang up, actually, about the point you call me a phenomenal writer, because I figured it wasn't going to get any better than that.
Well, you know what? If you've got something, it's bound and it's for sale, you're a writer.
So how does the son of a meteorologist decide he wants to be a writer?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Bring on the almond tequila and let's get started.
I like it.
Yeah. I was an introverted kid, pretty much, moving around made it tough to, make friends and all that stuff. So like a lot of introverted kids, I found my escape in reading. And, there was this one tough time in the home life when, my brother and I got shipped off to Tucson, Arizona. I got yanked out of school and I didn't know anybody and I barely knew the grandparents I was with. So, I read a lot and one day I wandered into this little dusty used bookstore and somebody had unloaded their entire collection of Edgar Rice Burroughs' Princess of Mars series. Now, my father and I, when he wasn't like in Vietnam or Korea or other exciting places, one of the things we would do is we'd watch Saturday morning TV. You know, they'd run the old black and white Johnny Weissmuller Tarzan.
Oh, right. Movie. Yeah. And Ramar of the Jungle.
Yes.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. And my dad, he was a reader as well. And he explained to me, he helped me understand the concept that somebody had actually created these really cool stories. And the guy's name was Edgar Rice Burroughs. So I saw that name on the paperback and I pulled one out. It was the first book. It was The Princess of Mars, which I know you guys have read more than once. You just got to. If you haven't, we have nothing further to discuss.
That I'm keeping my mouth shut.
Yeah, I'm going to stop you right there because I'm going to lay something on you right now. Where we're sitting is just... what is it, 2 miles that way, Tarzana?
Oh, yeah. No, not even that far.
No.
We are just on the edge of Tarzana, and do you know, and it sounds like you may, why it's called Tarzana in the San Fernando Valley?
Absolutely.
Yep.
ERB lived there, and he had his groves there.
And he had a company called the Edgar Rice Burroughs Company.
That's right.
Yeah, and they have displays in the post office there and have lots of stuff. Anyway, I just had to.
Well, I'll tell you what, Griff, you just won the Kewpie doll. Now you can continue with your explanation.
So there I am, this lonely, basically lost 10-year-old kid in a city I don't know. So, like I said, so I've got some money from, turning in some Coke bottles, and I put it down for this book. And I ride my little crummy 10-speed back home. And I sit down and I start reading. And 8 hours later, I come back from Mars, completely transported. I had been there, I'd been with the Tharks and the, and Daja Thoris. Not as long as I wanted, but I'd been there, right? And... I was a religious experience because it changed my life. I said, man, this is magic. This was like, it was real magic. It wasn't fraud. It wasn't sleight of hand. It had taken me someplace I'd never been and made me somebody I never knew I could be. And I said, this is magic I want to do. And I put that book down. I said, I'm going to be a writer. And I've never turn from that.
And here you are.
And here I am.
And here you are. Being interviewed on
LA Talk Radio
and the Writer's Block.
Maybe I should have brought that tequila tonight.
I'm having a hard time today. I don't know why. You know,
it is the circle of folk writing life.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. Virtually, we have over 500,000 listeners. So you could not have picked a better venue.
And I believe I'm eternally grateful for it, and there will be a case of something coming your way.
Well, I'll leave that for you to get the address from Jerry, and I have to make sure I get Brill some.
Right. I will talk to Grace the bookie and work it out.
I got to ask you, one of the things that struck me right off the bat, and because when I write screenplays, I have a tendency to write like this. Let me ask you this. What was it like, and why did you choose to write from a woman's point of view?
Can I give some context to my answer, or...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, please.
Take as long as you like.
One of the things I've observed about my writing is I write kind of whatever interests me, mm-hmm. which is almost certainly the reason I don't have a writing career at this point in time. Because when I was a rescue swimmer in the Coast Guard in San Francisco, they asked me, hey, write something for the newsletter. So I ended up writing a children's story about a prince who thought he was a frog, and we called it His Amphibian Hood. And people, they loved it. They said, my gosh, you've got to write more children's stories. But I didn't have any more children's stories to write because I'd sort of, said it that way. And I've also written screenplays and plays. And I just write whatever seems to serve the story best. And if I wrote well in a woman's voice, I don't know if that's just luck or a lot of reading or being married three times. There's just no telling where that came from. So,
telling off your ex-wives.
Well,
but mostly I think it's just because I kind of. I both hear and see the stories. It's just a turn of the phrase will like open a door or something. You guys know it. It mm-hmm. it is magic. It really is in a lot of ways.
It truly is.
And mostly just serve the story. It was just more a matter of it seemed important to capture both sides of that that dynamic. And the other thing is, you may have noticed when in the story, I was really trying to write it in a style of the times. You didn't describe it a lot to the audience, but the book takes place in the trenches of France in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
So because I like history a lot, I sort of set myself a challenge to write the novels as if they were written in that time period.
Mm-hmm.
So that created a lot of that influenced my word choices and the sentence construction and how you address some topic. So there's very little blue language, there's no boinking, again, I like the challenge because even if we're talking about war and the graphic things, I didn't want to get into the pornography of that stuff as mm-hmm. much as making people experience it on an emotional level.
Mm-hmm. Well, it amazes me that you picked probably one of the hardest subjects that anyone could ever pick to write about. World War I was, it's a tough subject to write about because there was so much going on, yet so little. It was so static, yet so busy all the time. But you also chose to write about a battle that lasted for, 4 months?
Back and forth.
The whistles go, the guys come up out of the trenches. Oh, yeah. Whistles go, guys come up out of the trenches. They run, they shot down, crawl back, missing legs, missing jaws. But the way that you made the nurses take care of these patients was amazing because you could see it. You know, and when they got back to the rear hospital, in the mud and walking around on the duck boards, I mean, you could hear the sloshing and the mud sticking to their boots and wanting to pull their boots off. And having been in Vietnam and knowing what it's going like through a rainy season on PSP, I could just feel it all over again. So you done good, Griff.
So Griff, thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
If you had to describe the story in 30 seconds, what would it be?
Young nurse falls in love with wounded English lieutenant. Fate and human cruelty intervene and tear them apart. And the novel series is pretty much an epic historical fiction that goes across the world. But a lot of it is about pretty much about how the hands of men can make heaven or hell of where we are. And the whole, to me, the theme is about choices. We can always make a choice. And that's it.
Now, one of the things that I noticed, you chose to write a lot of dialogue.
Right.
And that's one of the things that intrigued me about it. And is that a style that you just like, or is that just what you felt was appropriate for this particular series?
Oh, man, you're calling me out.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, well.
Because I don't know if I have a style. Like I said, I just write. Now, also, this was my second novel. I'd done a lot of other writing, and I was a member of the Writers Guild for a while, which became the death of a thousand cuts by MBAs at a certain point, and I just got tired of that. But it was just how I heard it, how I saw it, and another book. Another book series I have is called The Lonesome George Chronicles. It's my alternative history, which imagines what America might be like if Al-Qaeda got their act together in 2008 and hit us with coordinated attacks. Whole different tone, style, but I'm sorry, I have no answer. It just, for this series, this time, this world I see in my head, it works.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can say, I guess.
Well, you had some memorable characters in this book. I mean, from you had, of course, Charlotte, and then you had Robert, but then you had the matron, and I just really liked her, and I could just see this old curmudgeon nurse going around and, you know, with her hands on her hips and just, you know, taking a liking to Charlotte and to Robert and to the young boy, I don't recall his name, and the kitten. That was a good piece of writing with the kitten.
Well, that was, again, thank you.
But then, of course, you know, like every good writer, you had to kill the frickin' kitten off.
Jim's obsessed with the thing about Jim is obsessed with the fact that anytime he wants to change the storyline, he has somebody get shot.
That's right. Or like John Sanford said, bring a guy in with a gun.
Yeah.
I have changed more storylines by killing people off.
Well, you know, one of the things that it's really stuck out in me, and maybe this is because, and Jim, I know, can identify with this too, is we're both Italian. The French lady that came out with the baguette,
yes,
the warm baguette and the jam. And it's like, I'm sitting there and I'm seeing these nurses kind of gather around this and desire this. And in my head, I'm saying, I'm there. I want to be there. I can reach out and touch the bread, you know. And it was so cool. It was just,
with farm just fresh butter, too.
Yes. And it was just this little slice of paradise.
It was
in the midst of all of this.
And all the craziness, there was this little slice of really nice stuff going on. You know, didn't matter that they were filthy, dirty. Didn't matter they were eating mud. They had these nice, warm baguettes.
You know, I got to ask you, the research you did, because I know you did a lot of description on the nurses' uniforms and things like that. And some writers pass over that kind of stuff. You didn't. You went into detail on it. Did you put a lot of research in this? And where did you do your research?
I do a lot of poke and hope in my research. You know, you'll start with maybe just a question. Because fiction is lying, but I want to lie in a really honest manner.
Mm-hmm.
As a reader, I found what I like in books of this nature is the telling detail that makes it feel real. You know, we don't need every single aspect of the armaments and the this and the that, but the little things. I mean, you know, it might be the small annoyances we remember most. In book three, one of the things they comment on is that the Enfield rifle the British used, it had a brass firing pin, which tended to melt down
mm-hmm.
at a certain point, rendering that kind of thing makes it real, because it isn't all ghastly, it isn't all perfect, it just is there. So, but often I'd just be doing research about one thing, and it would lead me to something else. And speaking of the nurses, I had the most incredible find. I was doing a lot of internet searching because I was working full time, and my son was growing up, and the other kids were growing up too. I ran across a woman who had an aunt who had served, an American aunt who had served in the VAD in World War I. Her aunt, she had never met, died of pancreatitis or something awful, and was buried in France. And this woman, and I haven't spoken to her, Nellie Rote, NellyRote. Never met her. She was born after her aunt had died, but she heard about her. And as she grew older, it became sort of a mission of hers to learn everything she could about her aunt. And she published this amazing hardback book with letters and photos of her aunt in France, and newspaper articles from the time. And it was like this amazing piece of folk art just by itself that anybody who wants to know the history of World War One, or at least one small part of it, should read this woman's book. I got some information, and I just reached out to her and said, hey, this is really great. And she sent me a copy of her book. You know, this woman is like, now she's 80-something. She's deaf in both ears, and we still correspond from time to time. But that's the kind of searching for four-leaf clovers. I'm just looking. I find something, and then I'll just follow something else down a trail, and I just will find stuff that is amazing. And mostly, like I said, I'm looking for the telling detail without at the same time having characters that have knowledge there's no possible way they could have. I mean, we've all read the book set in 1940 where some guy is saying, boy, that nanotechnology is going to be a great thing. You know, that's just like bludgeoning us with it. So, but a lot of reading, a lot of reading and trying to go to primary sources. And there's these, and you know, God bless Amazon. A lot of people, you know, who want to make a quick buck are finding old documents are in the public domain
mm-hmm.
and republishing them. You know, one of the things I referred to for book two was this clearly lunatic British guy who was part of some group that went to observe the Communist Party Congress in 1919. Was talking about how great it was, and then the flip side was, you know, there was a British infantry officer's book about serving in the White Russian forces during the Civil War. So those are just things you'll just sort of, that might have been just a footnote somewhere. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. So I'll go hunt it up on Amazon. And so I have boxes of books, some of which were great use and some of which were no use at all.
Hmm. Hey, Hank Tuft, don't go away. I got to do another commercial real quick. We'll be back with you in just a few. I'm just going to stick you back on hold. And we're going to be okay, so don't go away. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? Well, it is for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for one night or two nights, or a getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. What's the answer? The dog's. So check out their website at www.alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you, and Russ Avison will thank you, and he was here last week. And right now he's on his way to Yellowstone with his woman and his dog. So that's it. And the time is now 7:29. You are back in the studio with Bob Brill, myself, Jim Christina, Jerry Christina. And on the phone is Roy Griffiths, or Griff as he is called by his friends. And if you want to call and talk to Griff, now the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that is 818-602-4929. Hey, Griff, where did you get the idea for these characters? Because some of them are really, really, really good. I have to say Alice is a bitch. Bob's agreeing with me. I mean, she was just an underhanded, backstabbing bitch.
Yeah.
But what was her, Kathleen, the American nurse that was in there with her? She was cool. Oh.
You know,
You're back.
Okay. You're on.
Great. Am I broken? Okay.
No.
Let's see.
Got some crazy glue if you are.
Yeah. We have button problems here, and the button problems are mine, so.
Oh.
Anyway, we're saying about what a bitch Alice was and what a nice person. I don't remember if it was Kathleen or Catherine.
Kathleen
was the American nurse. Yeah. She was great.
I don't know. Remind me to tell you, I have a Texas story to tell you two Western writers after this, but for me...
Don't hurt yourself now, Griff.
A lot of... Sir?
Don't hurt yourself.
A long neck.
Lone
I'm
star.
A tortured artist, and you're killing me here. A lot of my stories start with what if or how come.
Sure.
Yeah. Somebody tells me something. The inciting incident for this novel was something somebody told me several decades ago. It was an older English woman I was doing a community theater with, and she was mentioning what she remembered her great-grandfather telling her when she was a girl. And he was saying that the worst thing being in World War I was being in the trenches and hearing the wounded horses scream, mm-hmm. and how no one could do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought at that was, how could you listen to that?
Mm-hmm.
What would someone do? So that was sort of what started this whole four-book series. And I guess the characters were just people who would be there. What kind of person would do something about it? And then, to be honest, I have no idea where Charlotte came from. I knew that Robert Fitzgerald was wounded, and I guess if you're wounded, there's going to be a nurse. And this character, they appear to me. You know, it sounds very woo-woo, and I apologize, but people just show up. Kathleen just showed up. Matron just showed up. The Batman, Robert's, butler, footman, mm-hmm. aide-de-camp, Orlando just showed up.
Right.
Now, him, the only thing about him I knew was I liked the name Orlando, but the idea of the character was based on this blind English actor named the Great Orlando, who was in King Lear, directed by Jonathan Miller. And I just remember him talking about this guy and what a great actor he was, and something about that image of a small, unassuming guy who had these great qualities that you didn't quite pick up. They just came, and they maybe seem like people who would interact. I I apologize. They just mm-hmm. work.
Well, I was kind of curious. I know you said it early. You set the stage early, and I noticed this in the very first chapter. You set the stage by talking about the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks and the Russian Revolution mm-hmm. that was happening. And then in the end of the book, I won't give away anything, but the first book, there's more about that. Did you set out to do that, or is that one of those things that just kind of developed for you?
I set out to write one book. And I'm on book four now. It definitely just developed through a lot of my own reading. Yeah, I became aware of it, and it just came up. I didn't when this book. I have the inciting incident, which maybe asked that one question. And I don't know about you guys, but I'll just have a lot of ideas that are sort of free floating. And with like screenplays or plays, it's like the ideas are out there, but I need a container to put them in. And when I've got that, all of a sudden, all the right ideas start filling up that container.
Sure.
With novels, which I, like I said, I hadn't really written before. I had the idea from this community play 30 or 40 years ago. And then I had another, hey, what if or why not sort of idea that came to me 15 years ago. So one day, the two of them lined up, and I had a beginning and I had an ending. But I had no idea what was happening in between, how I was going to get from the beginning to the end. But I started writing anyway, and then you guys know how it is. Like I said, characters show up, things happen, and...
Make a turn in the road and somebody's there.
Well, I mean, characters show up when you have to have somebody,
right.
you know, do something to move the character along. So,
right.
I mean, I get that.
Right. But at the same time, you know, you guys know writing screenplays, there's, at least when I did screenplays, I had to write this really detailed 20-page single space treatment, which was based on my long short story about it, and then I just would plug that more or less into the screenplay format. But the novel, I just start writing, and it sounds fatuous, but yeah, I surprise myself sometimes by how smart I am or how funny I can be. Although I got to admit, there aren't a lot of laughs in this particular book.
No.
Yeah.
But, in actuality, it's not you being funny. It's the character being funny. And I found that to be true when you're writing characters and you have a good character. I mean, he's going to follow his own road. All you do is follow him. And I think Bob will agree with that. It's like his character, Lancer, and my character, the Hunter and Stryker and even Jonah Blue. You follow them where they go. If they're a good character, they will take their own path. And all you're doing
Absolutely.
Is writing to follow them, which makes writing the story easy.
Right, I just felt like I was taking dictation.
well, that's what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah. And I, as I said, I was trying to write this as if this was a history of something that actually occurred. Which influenced my word choice and stuff like that. But most of the time it's like, slow down. Wait a minute. Tell me that part again. And it's just all out there pretty much as soon as I sit down at the keyboard, which is pretty nice.
Well, you did a fantastic job, and I'm going to switch gears here on you a little bit.
Oh, no. Well, hey, can I
okay.
Can I throw in my tech story before we switch gears?
What's that? Oh, yeah, go ahead.
All right. I'll make it fast. I gather you guys write Westerns.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, I'm living in a small town in East Texas, which is green and fecund and beautiful and a little bit muggy. But I swear to you, 3 miles from where I live, from where I'm sitting this very moment, is the original graveyard where Quanah Parker's mother was buried.
Cynthia Ann.
Yep. she's it, they've got a plaque saying, you know, she's buried here, mother of Quantum, and then they reburied her, I guess, in Oklahoma, I think it was. But historic graveyard, 3 miles from here, and that's one of the reasons I love this place.
I think they dug her up and they put her up where Quanta had a what he's called it, the 5-star house that he had built on the reservation, and when he became a lawyer, and it had 5 stars on the roof that you could see from distances. And that would always identify Quanta's house. Of course, it had no water. Yeah. Of course, it didn't have anything, but it was a nice house.
You like tromping through old graveyards? Because I know I do. Seriously. I love it.
I do. We're renovating a house that was built in the 30s, but it was pieced together from about 180-year-old... Yeah, from a 140-year-old church and some other lumber. So,
wow.
I love history, and it's called the Saxon House. Everybody in this town of 650 people knows it.
Wow.
And in this graveyard, 3 miles away, the Saxons are buried.
Wow.
So, it's very cool. But I digress.
Okay.
So change gears.
Well, we're gonna switch gears on you a little bit here, and you work full time.
Yes, sir.
And like most writers, you never gave up your day job.
I learned that lesson early.
There you go. Well, didn't we all? So the question I have for you is, when do you find time to write? And how often during a week? And how long do you normally, sit down to write?
I got in the habit of writing very early in the morning. I lived in California and I had a 1-hour commute, one way. And then 3 days a week, I went to get my son because I had a split custody thing. And that added, an hour and a half to my day. So when I got home at the end of that day, I had no creative energy left, and just barely enough energy left to try to be a decent father. But I discovered if I wanted to write, I would get up early in the morning. For a long time, I got up at 4 in the morning to write for a couple of hours before work. And since I just moved, I've only been out here 4 months. I'm still getting my pattern down. I'm right now getting up at 5 in the morning to write. And things are still a little disjointed and I'm still tripping over stuff in the dark. But typically I get up, I make a cup of coffee, and I try to do that 5 days a week.
You know, they have this really great invention now. It's called a light.
They even add LEDs to them.
They do. And then now they have LEDs. Yeah, so you shouldn't have to trip around in the dark. Okay,
this doesn't feel historically accurate to me.
So. Oh, there you go. Okay, here's the question that we ask every single writer that is on this show. The name of this program is The Writer's Block. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you work your way out of it?
I did have writer's block at one time, because I viewed my writing, incorrectly, basically. I had this, I had my youthful childhood scars, and I really loved the idea of being a writer, and not only just, I got confused, the joy of creation, when it's flowing and it's great, I never want to lose that. But I'd also gotten kind of caught up in the idea of being a writer, and so that became what I was hanging my self-worth on. So that meant that every rejection, and I had many, meant I was therefore unworthy. I wasn't valuable, worth anything, and that ate at me for a long time. And weirdly enough, it was having a script turned down by the president of Universal that set me free, because I was disappointed. And my son at the time was about 2 or 2.5 at the time, and that's when I said, I got to go back to the real job. I was a member of the Writers Guild, and I was able to kind of support myself briefly for a year and a half or so. But when that didn't work out and I wasn't able to convert anything else, I was crushed. But then I said, well, I got, you know, kids need regular food and vaccinations and health care. If it's just you, you know, we can all be hosers living in a station wagon at the beach. You know, we'd be, you know, baristas and surfers in our spare time. But, you know, when there's a kid involved, you gotta step up. But there came a point in time when I understood that not being this Hollywood success, not having that self-aggrandizement of, you know, hey, I'll go to Hollywood and have starlets rub coconut oil on my bald spot. That would have made me a crummy dad if I'd had that.
It doesn't work.
You know, I wouldn't have been
I'm looking at Brill. It doesn't work.
As someone who wears a hat all the time and no yeah. hair.
Go ahead, yeah. Griff.
I'm sure it's a tender subject for a lot of us at a certain age. But I realized I would have been a crummy dad if I had that kind of egotistical success. And that was when I decided I'm just going to write for myself. And I may never be a success, but well, it was like when I decided to become a rescue swimmer. I'd been a drama geek in high school. I'd never done that kind of thing, and I had an early midlife crisis at 25, and I really looked for basically what I was looking for was a rite of passage, but I didn't call it that. And I said I gotta find out, you know, what I'm made of. So I gotta go do this thing, and that changed my perception of myself, which is really important. And if there's one thing I believe, I think is, you know, you change your story and you can change your life, which to me is the power of writing. And, you know, we can tell people different stories so they can start to look at their life differently. But I'm going all over the place. I apologize.
Writer's block.
But writer's block, yes, as opposed to not shutting up. The block I put on myself by putting all this weird pressure about somebody else's idea of success. And I just went with, I think I'll be a decent dad. And at the same time, I'm going to do my best to fulfill my dream. And I would rather die knowing I tried. Just like the rescue swimmer thing. At least I tried. Even if I failed, I didn't want to die going, gee, I wish I'd sacked up and, you know, did this thing. Well, you know, so I survived rescue swimmer school. I was happy about that. And then, but that freed me. That kind of freed me from the block. It freed me from all that stuff. And I just said, I'm just going to try. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to, you know, write a lot. What is it the old screenwriter said? Seat of the pants to the seat of the chair. That's like your best writing advice ever. You just sit down and you start writing. But that was the freedom. Was I kind of changed my definition of success to doing it. Because we have all these people who talk about the stuff they're going to do, sure. And they talk about what they want to do. But at least I was going to do it. I was going to die trying. You know, if it's going to be the creative Alamo, well, I was going to go down shooting.
Well, I, you know, a lot of people talk about the fact that a writer's existence is a lonely one. And truly it is. I mean, the best stuff comes when it's comes pouring out of you. It's personal, it's relatable, and, you know, so many people can't write like that because they don't want the world to know about all their warts and all the bad things about them that comes out of the inside. Do you kind of reach inside for that kind of stuff to let it out, or you like most of us that say, yeah, I can't really write about that?
Yeah, I don't want to go that far.
Yeah. Yes and no. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to, writing is therapy, but I think, you know, at the same time, you have to have a kind of emotional honesty, you know, and one of the things I really appreciate you fellas saying, telling me is that you felt like you were there because that's one of my goals. I want to give people this emotional experience that, you know, like you said, they feel like they can smell it and they can feel the weariness or whatever, but they also feel the emotional journey. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's where we're at. And so yeah, you've kind of got to get in touch. So there are places in the novels where I'm sharing some of my own feelings about failure or success or, you know, my personal belief in choice. You know, if things aren't working, make a different choice. And it does. It's one of the things that annoys me about, you know, a lot of alleged literature which focuses on, let's see, life is horrible, people are terrible, and let's just give up. And I want to go smack somebody, because unless you're chained to the wall of a North Korean prison, in America, you got choices. You can do something else. It ain't, it's not the fault of the man or the patriarchy or the system, unless you're in Hollywood. But, you know, it's you can always make a choice. You can do something different.
True story. True story.
I try to put that in my work.
Well, you know, I hate to cut you off, but we are out of time. And this hour is, or 50 minutes is screamed by. So you've done good, Griff.
I just have a quick question.
Oh, thank you.
How long were you a rescue swimmer?
I was a rescue swimmer 3 years total in San Francisco. I was on board a patrol boat in Chesapeake Bay, which has got some really exciting waters in the winter.
I bet. Well, my hat's off to you, because I admire anybody that could jump from a boat or a helicopter
into that ice cold water
that could rescue somebody.
Okay, the books are called again.
The By the Hands of Men series.
There you go. And they are available where?
On Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
First one's free on Kindle. God bless them. And I'm at roymgriffiths.com.
Okay.
If you want to know a little bit more about me.
Okay. And your email address is there as well. I know that because I sent you an email today. Or
yes,
at least U.S. Post Office did. And
they did.
Yes, they did. And thank you so much for spending your evening with us. I know you're, 2 hours difference? And so now,
yes, sir.
Now it's like 10 o'clock for you.
And
And your third tequila.
Yep. It's really been a pleasure.
It really, truly has.
Very much.
Thank you so much for sharing with us. And from all our listeners, and I know that they were thrilled. You know, a lot of times when they don't call, it's not that they don't want to talk to you. It's just they're interested in what you have to say.
Well, fellas, and Gracie, thank you very much. I know
Jerry.
You guys, Jerry, I lied.
It was a G name.
And George.
Yeah. Just call her Fred.
Okay.
Or Bookie.
I know we had to jump through some hoops to get me on this because I moved to Texas, but I sure appreciate it.
And no worries.
It was fun talking to you guys.
No worries.
I actually get a lot of chance to talk.
And you know you can rebook anytime. Just give me a call, but we're booked for the end of this year.
Yeah, and whenever you just want to call and check in, feel free to just give us a holler and check in. Just let us know what's going on.
Keep in touch.
Yeah.
I will do that. Thank
Loved
you very
having
much.
You. Thank you so much for joining us. And take care of the rest of your night and go have another margarita on us. Woo-hoo! Woo!
Deal.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Griff. All right. That's Roy Griffiths. And By the Hands of Men.
Good
series. Good stuff.
Absolutely good stuff.
Great book. I mean, to start it out wonderfully.
Yeah.
And I got about 40 pages into the second book, and it started out really good, too. So,
well, you know, it was funny. The first chapter is really long.
Yes, it is.
It's very long. And it's like, I was reading through it. I was like, wait a minute, did I move to the second chapter?
I know. I did the same thing.
Yeah. But it was really good, the setup. You, right off the bat, you felt you were there, and you knew where you were going as far as, you know, where it was starting out and what place you were at. And that was really good.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Now that you said about chapters, you're going to read the whole book. Chapters are important to me. The fewer the chapters, the faster I read. But what difference does it make if it has a chapter?
Well, there's a break, and there's a transition.
It gives you a chance to start, bring in another character, or start another
part of the
story.
It also gives you a goal as a reader.
Right.
You know, if I've got 5 minutes, and I've got to be somewhere, and I've got 3 pages left, I'm going to go ahead and spend that extra 5 minutes
exactly.
to get to the end of the chapter.
Exactly.
I will. It's just
okay, but
nature.
What if they don't have? I mean,
there's no book around that does not have chapters.
I challenge anybody to write a book with no chapters because it's going to read the
okay,
same
way. Okay, you heard
way.
It here for the bookie wants you to do it. If you're out there and you think you can do it,
it's a challenge.
And
it's not only because she's selling bookmarks.
That's right. It's a challenge directly from the bookie. Bob, thanks for being in.
Thank you.
Next week we have, I put him away. Next week, here it is. Next week on the 7th is John Arthur Long. The 14th is Tom Simons. The 21st is Michael Brady. And the 28th, It's Bob Brill.
And I'll explain at that point, Sig Alert.
That's right. And Russ Avison will be in with you that night.
Cool.
So you get to meet Russ, and he's a good guy. From everybody in the Writer's Block family, that includes our recalcitrant and missing Bobby Jean Bell, who is on a road trip with her husband, and Russ Avison, who was up in, Yellowstone, Bob Brill, Jerry, and myself. Thank you for joining us, and we are out of here.